Joy Harjo is a critically acclaimed poet and musician. She'll be a guest at the New Zealand Festival in March next year. 3 months ago, she was named United States Poet Laureate, making her the first Native American to earn the title. Born in Oklahoma, Joy Harjo is of Muscogee Creek heritage and often draws on Native American spirituality and culture in her work. She has a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Native Writers Circle of the Americas and says poetry became a way to speak about, especially Native women's experiences at a time of great social change. When her Poet Laureate appointment was announced, Joy Harjo was acknowledged for helping to tell an American story of traditions both lost and maintained, of reckoning and myth-making. Joy Harjo has published many books of poetry, including How We Became Human, The Woman Who Fell from the Sky, and She Had Some Horses. Also a memoir, Crazy Brave. She says being named Poet Laureate came as a total surprise.
I was moving along doing what I always do, which is writing and performing and cleaning, cooking. The things that we do to live.
What responsibilities and what opportunities does becoming Poet Laureate offer?
Yes, I'm still moving into the position in a way. The first big event is September 19th as the first official event. But since the announcement, of course, June 19th, I've been very, very busy. And it is a big responsibility. It's an honor, but along with that honor comes a big responsibility because in a way I'm essentially a poetry ambassador for the whole country. But what's very exciting for me in this is that one, being the first Native American in that position, it draws, it turns America's attention toward Indigenous people, Indigenous poets, and presence in this country and in the world.
Just listening to you, that it's very early days. Do you already have a sense, though, broadly, about what you'd like to accomplish with this opportunity? Are you beginning to sketch an overview of what you would like it to be and how you would like it to matter?
Definitely. I mean, certainly in this country and in the world, we're going through major changes and shifts, with climate change, with how do we speak with each other? You know, what does it mean to be a human being? And how are we going to move together, move forward? Because essentially, we are Earth. We are not separate from the Earth. We are Earth. And how does poetry figure, into the present, past, and future? And so I've been thinking about it. Of course, I've been trying to figure out concretely what a project would be. And it's going to be difficult to have one project. I already have seven project ideas, but it will be about speaking with each other. There's such polarization, at least in this country. And I think poetry is the place that you go to get beyond political rhetoric and to get to the heart of the matter.
How do you describe your poetry and what it is about?
That's always been difficult for me to describe my poetry. I was surprised to come to poetry. I always loved it, but I liked painting and I was always interested in the healing arts. But I came to poetry when I was a young woman and part of Native rights movements. And poetry, when I heard and met Native poets, I realized that this art that I love so much could be written by us, and that made a huge difference. And I came to that in realization at a time when in the midst of our tribal nations asserting sovereignty and asserting our human rights. And so my poetry was born of that, of of having, it was born of a need to speak, and it gave a means to speak that was, I always think of poetry as being the kind of language you go, it's not everyday language, although it can be made of everyday language, but it's a poetry to go, it's the language you go to when you need to speak, when you want to speak without, beyond words, when you want to speak of those things that are absolutely crucial, tender, and important.
Why is it the form so suitable for that, so appropriate for that?
Why is a poem?
Yes.
Because a poem is something you can hold. You can hold it in your hands. You can hold it in your heart. It's easily, you don't have to, it can fit, you know, it can fit in so many places. And by the nature of its size, it's even by the nature of, you know, you can carry, a poem can carry time, it can carry memories, a poem, it can carry grief. You know, we often go to poetry when we're grieving. A poem can carry joy, can carry, we always go to poetry during transformative moments of our lives because poetry is like singing on paper.
Please tell me about your home and your people. Muscogee Creek, am I correct with the pronunciation, please?
Yes, Muscogee Creek people, and we're originally from the southeastern part of the U.S., from the states Alabama, Georgia, Florida, that part of the country. And we were moved illegally by Andrew Jackson, who was president of the United States, in a time very similar to now. We were moved illegally from our lands there into what was Indian Territory and is now Oklahoma. And so we're one of the larger tribes. Actually, we're a confederacy of tribal groups, mostly Muscogean peoples, who joined together in the late 1700s, early 1800s to deal nation to nation with France, Spain, Great Britain, and then the United States. But we're still here. I think we're probably, 90,000 people. We still have our language, we have our culture, we just had, you know, our ceremonies a week or two ago, you know, we're in the midst of ceremonial season, and, you know, we're still a thriving people.
What was your life like as a child and growing up?
Well, I grew up here in Tulsa, and Tulsa is part of the Creek Nation, or the Muscogee Creek Nation. So, you know, I grew up in an urban area. It's not a high urban area, you know, but it was, you know, a small city that, so most of, there were, is a very high population of native population as well as non-native population. So I went to public school here. And then when I was 16, I left here to save my life, essentially, and went to a Bureau of Indian Affairs school. It was then mostly a high school with postgraduate work in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and that saved my life. It was an art school with Native artists there, young people from all over the country in the late 60s, and that was exactly what I needed, is to be there in the company of, you know, other young Native people who had gone through similar challenges that I had, and we had our art, and it changed my life. I know it changed the lives of so many of us, and that school saved a lot of our lives, which is, it's a different story than the usual Indian school story, and there are those other kinds of stories where, you know, children were, and some of them, you know, in recent history, dragged away from their homes and as really young children and taken away from families.
Saved your life how? But because you were starving for something and this allowed you to find it?
It's about personhood. I mean, being in Oklahoma, it was, you know, there's a rough history here with, in the state story and in the American story about, you know, America and Native peoples, and also family, you know, family dynamics and difficulties going on, and much of some of that related, of course, to colonization and how you deal with being Native in a country, you know, in lands that were yours and taken away. So what the school did is, like, we were there together. It was the first time, you know, I would talk in class. I wouldn't talk in class in a mixed group, but with other Native people, I felt more comfortable I felt more myself in that kind of school. I needed that at that point in my life.
Was this when you began writing?
No, I didn't. I was one of the shyest children at Indian school, but I wound up in theater and wound up in one of the first all-Native drama and dance troupes. And I didn't start writing, and then I was pregnant. I went home as a teenage mother. I did graduate from high school, but I went home as a teenage mother and had some really rough years, and then went back to school, went to the University of New Mexico, and it was there I began writing.
You had wanted to be a painter, I think. There was always a creative force in you.
Always, from the time I was very young, you know, children, people always ask what you want to do when you grow up, and I always said without any hesitation, I want to be an artist.
We spoke earlier of what poetry is and what it can, excuse me, can convey. As a First Nations person, what does that bring to your poetry, even the way you see the world, let alone write about it?
That's an interesting question. And I get asked about that because, well, I'm in the middle with other Native poets. We've been editing a Norton anthology of Native poetry, historic one, called When the Light of the World Was Subdued, Our Songs Came Through. And what is different, I think of poetry as carrying the spirit of the people. And I guess, and so I've been asked, you know, what's the difference or what do we bring to it? Certainly we bring, I think every people has a responsibility to the place that their people come from, you know, and to those forces that have kept the people alive. And so you'll find that in Indigenous poetry, which is an acknowledgement of the relationship of living people to living lands, to living to a living landscape, to a living natural forces, to and to a kind of a connection between that and human beings. Does that make sense?
It does. There is a whole ecosystem that is the prism through which everything is viewed, perhaps what one sees is the ecosystem. I'm interested also, as with other Indigenous peoples perhaps, there is this sense of ancestors always with us. And you have actually spoken of poetry ancestors. Are they the same thing? Is that carrying one's ancestors all the time? Or is it specific to poetry itself? It has always come from something else, from someone else.
I think it's, in some ways, it's the same thing. I mean, if you can take almost any poem, I would I'm you could probably take almost any poem and look at it and name the ancestors, name, you know, a poem wouldn't be in this form or wouldn't have this particular manner of speaking or architecture or rhythm without its predecessors or ancestors. And the same with, you know, the same with humans or with any particular line of questioning, you know, or investigation or any line of creativity. You know, we don't just emerge, that, you know, a poem emerges, but there's always that bedrock or that field of ancestral being, even in terms of how we think and how we move about in the world.
As befitting a poet laureate, there is decades of work and many volumes of poetry and prose in your career. At times, does it feel like you are laying yourself bare? Yes, poetry is political and poetry is spiritual. It is also personal. And are there times where you have almost felt that to the quick?
Certainly, although not all the poems are about me. I think that there's a misconception, because the voice of poetry is often so personal. It's usually such a singular voice, and so that it's usually assumed that the speaker of the poem is the poet, but that isn't always so. And often there's a misconception that we're you know, thrill seekers, or we're looking for experience because we have to be inspired and to write a poem, and then we get inspired and out comes the poem and there it is. But it's not always like that. It's, you know, yes, it's nice when there's inspiration, but poems come and they're like children, you know, they're all different and they have their ways of coming. And some of them you work on. There's poems I've worked on for 2 to 3 years, and there was one poem I worked on all summer, and I had a huge notebook and a folder with pages and pages, and it never came together. And other poems come about much quicker, even though I might tinker with them or work with them for a while, to get them in the right form and the right, to get them just right.
This is a time in history, as you alluded to, although the United States history has been at many junctures brutal and painful, sometimes heroic, sometimes there have been important eras of healing and opportunity. Always turbulent, it seems. How do you, as a poet, and taking on this particular opportunity, look at your country right now, and what is welling up within you as you approach this year ahead?
That is a huge question. That question is like, what is you're naming the process of what I am going through right now as I ponder this job. It is a job, in a way. It is a job. It's something given to me to do. And I think, okay, what is given to me to do? What does poetry do? What does a speaker, what does a poet do? I've often said, you know, the poet is the truth teller. And then here I'm standing here as this representative. No, I'm not all poets. I'm just me, that I'm standing in this position. And I, you know, and it is, you know, it is about a generation. I'm part of a generation. I always think of every generation as a kind of person or an entity in and of itself that comes in with a particular mission, just like a family has a particular mission. If you watch, you know, patterns play out and challenges. And right now, this country, I look around, I love these lands. I love the peoples. I've been, you know, my spirit has been fed by so many of, you know, I've been to probably nearly every tribal nation in this country, and to every state, to communities, just because I've been traveling for years and visiting and performing for years since I started writing poetry in about 1973. And, you know, which is funny for the shyest kid at Indian school, in traveling and performing. And so, and then it's my age too, and I'm looking, it's part of that too. It's like, okay, there isn't much time left. What will, you know, maybe there's not much time left for, you know, the world, the country, the people. Certainly we're at the end of an era. This country is, this world is, and we're shifting. And those are the times, though, that are times of most potent creativity. So I can feel that welling up in the country and in the world. Even as we're seeing terrible wars, injustices, and terrible acts being done in our names, it can be difficult to bear. And sometimes the only way I can bear it is in poetry, is by creativity, by crying out in a poem, by reaching out in a poem, by listening to a voice and letting the voice of a child, perhaps, or of a mother who's, you know, been separated from her child, you know, come out, you know, emerge in a poem.
You do choose other artistic forms, though, as well. We mentioned you had wanted to be a visual painter, but you have over time become a musician as well, a saxophonist, yep. No less. Not the easiest instrument to master.
Well, it doesn't make sense. It's not logical, because as a poet, it's better if I use a guitar or ukulele or bass, which I'm working on. But I love the horn. I love the saxophone because it's the voice, and it's the voice. I mean, I can sing, but my horn can sing with a different kind of range and emotion that I can't quite do with my voice. And, I started playing when I was almost 40, but I've always loved music. And, you know, a large part of how I came to poetry was through music.
You are also a teacher of poetry. And how do you approach the guidance, I guess, of another poet on their journey? There is always a question in any creative endeavor, really, can you teach? How do you set about it?
Well, I think what teaching ultimately is putting, helping people be in the place they need to, and to have the, you know, gather the materials they need, and advising them after you set them loose. Everyone is different, and every path to poetry is different. And part of that, I think the best advice I ever got, and it sounds very simplistic but it's not. It's extremely profound, is to be yourself. You know, and what does that mean, to be yourself? And what does that mean as a poet, to be yourself? And, but I think ultimately, too, and another point, is that it's about learning how to listen. And so how do you teach someone how to listen? I think it's harder. It can be harder these days because there's so much... There are so many words and music and distractions that we, there's a kind of listening that I think poetry requires and demands that is harder to come by these days, but not impossible, because there's a great, poetry has become, I was just over at the National Endowment for the Arts, and there was a study done recently that showed that poetry, the reading of poetry, and is on the upswing in this country.
It's not surprising in some ways, for just the reasons you described earlier, so much can be expressed, experienced, remembered in what looks like a short form, but is so multi-layered.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not surprised to hear of that of which you speak. Also, the commonality, I guess, of Indigenous peoples around the world. I know you've been to New Zealand and performed in New Zealand. 2011, I think you were here, and I know that you've met many times with our wonderful writer, Patricia Grace.
Yes.
Do you find a commonality sometimes and an inspiration from around the world, from peoples who have an understanding of the same particular kind of loss that your people's experienced and the way that it echoes through time?
Yeah, there's a connection. You realize that. You realize that ultimately that we're all relatives. I mean, I've been with the Sami people up north in Norway. I've been with Australian Aboriginal people. I'm friends with Ellie Kobe Eckerman, the poet there, and with people in, all over, the Americas, all over the world. And, yeah, there's a definite connection. And I don't think it's just because of our experience as, with the colonizer, the colonization. I think, yes, that lends, that's part of it. But it also has to do with a certain way of conducting ourselves and being in the world with the world, that's innately different. And I would say that is true with, those people who are Indigenous people. There's Indigenous peoples in every culture, but it has to do with those who carry those, I don't want to say original teachings, I'm getting far afield, but there's a definite kinship.
That is Joy Harjo, recently named Poet Laureate and in the United States. And as we said, we'll be coming to New Zealand for the New Zealand Festival in March next year.